With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Our thanks to this week's sponsor, Hayloft Plants Limited of Pershore, Worcestershire.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla, producing single...
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some news, views, a bit of seasonal advice and hopefully answer some of your gardening quandaries. We gardeners have had a pretty good few days here in the southeast of England. The weather for mid-November been pretty mild, but we had to dodge some quite heavy showers over the weekend. When you have several plots to tend, you tend to get one up straight and tidy, and before you know it, weeds have grown out of hand on the others. The back garden that I'm trying to renovate that had that invasion of bamboo is being cleared bit by bit, and at every visit efforts are made to dig another strip across the plot the length of a fence panel. At least the soil is proving fertile, where old turf, previously lawn, is being dug well into the patch. It has yielded several lovely handfuls of late-sown runner beans over the last 7 to 10 days. But before I get into renovating old plots, what's the news this week? Well, we live in a crazy kind of world. I hear that glasshouse crops of poinsettia are likely to be sold out by the first week of December. That's really early. Apparently there's just this urge to get on with things by all accounts, and certainly a move to liven up Christmas. Makes my plans for school children to sing their Christmas music at residential homes and give the elderly some of those red-bracted plants to cheer their rooms a bit difficult, while the greenhouses will be emptied earlier and heating costs are saved for the growers. There will, of course, still be plenty of plants in shops, but for good quality, it will be advisable to shop in good time this year. There's no doubt anyway that getting plants into homes and settled in the daytime onto really nice light windowsills before days get to their shortest really does make sense. And remember the tip about watering. You pick up a plant. If it's light in weight, it will probably need watering. Once you've given it a good water, you'll feel how much heavier it is. And then when you draw the curtains or whatever it is you do first thing every morning, you can just check. And if plants are light, give them a bit of water. And if they're heavy, leave well alone. The other news is that flowering houseplants are really going out of fashion, and the rapid change in public fashions is really quite remarkable. He's having to find all kinds of young foliage plants, and the old favourites, Ficus domestica, you know, the large leaf rubber plants, Monstera, a Swiss cheese plant, Dracaena, they're all back in fashion in a big way. As they say, what's been around comes around. Oh, and I also hear from the National Allotment Society that ladies are taking over allotments on a grand scale. They said that if you went back into the previous century, 1973, just 2% of allotmenteers were women, and that increased to 20% by 2003, and now in London it stands at 63%. So there we are. Not so many of the old flat cap brigade, hey? Well, they always said that the ladies had green fingers, and that's certainly proving the case now. And what about advice for this time of the year? On a still, dull day last week, conditions were just right to light the incinerator and burn an accumulation of all kinds of prunings and stems of brambles and old rose bushes. It's not so much as a spring clean, but an autumn clean in the garden, and the good thing is that jobs done now do tend to last. Once the leaves are down, if you dig the veg plot, well, then there it can sit and the surface be improved by freezing and thawing and wetting and drying will really break the clods down. And once the paths are swept, they should stay reasonably clean, and it's well worth doing to get all the rough sort of debris off and dry, and then the paving is nowhere near as slippery. I mean, fruit trees, once the leaves are off, they can be pruned, cleaned up around the base, a bit of well-rotted compost or well-rotted manure put around the base, and they won't need any more attention until next spring. Summer plants cleared from pots and containers can be replanted to remain colourful for the next few months. We've just planted one with a dwarf silver-blue conifer, a small-leaved ivy, and one of those soft, velvet-leaved Senecio angel wings. Boy, it shines in the low light in the evenings. It's almost white. And then there's a red mini cyclamen, just the colour combination in the run-up to Christmas. In the 1960s, Britain was planting something like 50 million rose bushes every year. And for some reason, roses seem to have slipped a bit in popularity as far as planting the bushes are concerned. And so in the Floral Fantasia area at Hyde Hall, we thought it would be quite a nice idea to plant a little demonstration bed. It's just 10 feet by 10 feet. 3 metres by 3 metres if you're in new money. And what we really wanted to do was to show the visitor, if they had just a small garden, how roses would give them very good value for money. I've just resold a bed in my own front garden that had a dozen Bonica roses in, and they were there for 40 years. I mean, can you imagine anything that would give you better value for money? But of course, the way that you prepare the soil is important, and at Hyde Hall, we have Molly Christman, who's been doing that work. Molly, can you just explain what the soil's like here and what you've done?
Yep, so here at Hyde Hall in Essex, we struggle with very, very horrible clay soil. I suppose you could say I started prepping the bed last year, where we dug in lots and lots of compost, but this last week, we've dug in manure, very well rotted manure. We started with digging a trench and emptying that trench, digging in the manure, and then digging in the next trench of soil into that and so on. We've let that sit for about a week. Should be nice and ready for the roses, and hopefully they last a very long time. We've planted a series called Precious, and is that a good choice, Jo?
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Molly. The precious roses are a good choice. They're a bedding rose, which means they look great planted out en masse. We've planted 16 precious bush roses in this bed in three colours, gold, amber and precious love, which is a ready orange shade. We've also planted four standard roses. So these are precious roses grafted onto a 80 centimetre stem. So you will have a spread of colour from May probably through to October, if not later, depending on when you get your first frosts. So you'll get the colour from the bedding rose and also from the standard roses, which will give height as well. And they're also really healthy roses, so no need for any chemical spray disease control.
Thanks, Joe. I really look forward to them. And we don't see many standards planted. I don't understand why, because they give height. If you were just planting four roses in a small bed, it would be worth dropping a rose in amongst them just to give you that sort of pyramid shape. I'm optimistic that this little bed of ours will be really colourful from June, but I mustn't whisper too much in Joe's ear because we're going to underplant it with tulips. So we have a really good show of tulips coming up in April, and then on top of the tulips we're going to plant a mass of hardy cyclamen coombe, predominantly in the white shades, and they'll sort of cover the ground with foliage from mid-December right the way round to April when the tulips come up. We thought that the bed would be quite nicely edged, and so around the edging we're going to introduce a new kind of catmint, Nepeta Persian, spelt P-U-R-R-S-I-A-N, sorry about that, Americanism in the name, and Persian blue will just give that beautiful edging to the colour of the precious roses, which, as Joe has just explained, are in that amber, yellow and orangey kind of shades. And the blue, I think, will go very nicely with that. So we'll have colour year-round on a size which would suit many modern gardens today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Continuing this week's rose theme, I spoke to Robert Mattock. There's a family name synonymous with the rose. They introduced many successful roses from renowned German breeder Cordis. I've known Robert for many years now and have good reasons to thank him for the excellent specimen roses that graced many a show garden at Chelsea Flower Show in recent years. Who better to speak on the subject of roses? And now an academic with remarkable knowledge of the history of the rose, and who, if I have any instinct, is set to improve the fragrance in roses. Robert, I understand that in recent years you're much more an academic studying the history of roses. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely right. After my father died in 2002, having sold the volume production of our branded crop out into Eastern Europe and then sold the branded crop on, not the brand, mind you, I became very interested in remontancy, which, as you know, is how roses flower repeatedly. I was, funny enough, sitting in under the colonnades in the Villa Giulia in Rome one early summer, and I saw all these bronzini pictures of what I knew straight away to be damask roses. And I couldn't work out why this damask rose had been there so early. And when I looked a bit further at the thing, I found that they were in Paestum, the port south of Rome, way back to about 200 BC. At the same time, I also realised that a lot of people have been trying to find the origin of this damask rose. And the damask rose is what your garden viewers will know largely as the cabbage rose. So it's a very common garden plant in the West. There was no indication from anyone of where its origin was, so I thought I'd better find out. And so that was my first research project done at Bath University. I picked up a master's and then all the rest of the doctorates and all the things you have to do in academia, and we carried on from there.
Amazing. Almost road to Damascus, we might say. You're talking about BC. It's an awful long time ago.
Yes, it is. A lot of people had looked hard for the source of this Damas Reis, and for a couple of reasons. One, back in the medieval times in the UK, it was used as a medicinal plant, a bit like Rosa Gallica is called the apothecary's rose. Then the damask rose was very much used as a source of medicine, and that goes back to the time of the Crusaders, who saw everybody using this damask rose. And when I look further back, indeed, it had been used since about 4,000 years ago by people like the Assyrians and the Hittites. In those days, rose water was pressed from the petals, and it was used as a daily astringent, much the same as we use bleach or washing up liquid. That's what these guys were doing all those years ago.
It's interesting to think that they were using the petals. Almost brings us up to date, you know, in the way that children sort of try to make a rose perfume with scented petals in glasses.
Well, absolutely. Now, funny enough, the parentage of the damask, I found there was actually the seed parent, Peter, is actually Rosa Gallica. Now, the Gallica is a rose species native to Western Europe, through Central Europe, and into the western part of Central Asia. And really, it's this Rosa Gallica that has given rise to so many, not only of our garden hybrids, but in actual fact, what happened with climate change is that Rosa Gallica spread further and further east, seeking to preserve, if you like, its genetic integrity. And where it met strong species along the way, it formed a subspecies, one of them being Rosa damascena. So our Gallica got more than halfway to Uzbekistan, and then the hunter-gatherers at the time, and then the farmers who married their wives and so on, brought it all the way back to Rome by 300 BC. So Gallica's got a lot to answer for.
That's an amazing story, and that Mother Nature actually moved gently across all those miles, and then the two meet up to have such an effect on our modern-day roses. You spoke about enormous quantities being grown for the oil.
Well, that's right. I mean, first of all, for rose waters. So even today, Peter, where rose water is used throughout Iran, Iraq, through the Stans into India and onto China, then the centre of rose water production is around Isfahan in modern-day Iran. I mean, there are 400 square kilometres just around Isfahan of this rose. People just think nothing of it. Much as we see a field of yellow mustard, you just have big fields of pink Rosa damascena growing around.
And how would they propagate those then? Is that a sort of hardwood cutting job, or?
I looked very hard at that because, manifestly, if you're transporting plant material through some pretty arid and harsh climatic conditions, carrying around the budwood that you and I know so well in the UK just was going to dry up straight away. So in actual fact, I found that they were grown from suckers. That took a long time to find that, Peter. And eventually it was in Theophrastus, the Greek recorder, who described suckers but didn't give them a name. Now, one of the advantages of living in Oxford, we're not short of the odd few classicists around here. So I put it I put it to a bunch of these guys. They came up with the answer. And so suckers it is. And of course, suckers, as you know, Peter, you can wrap a bundle of suckers in a bit of wet hessian,
yeah,
and they'll last forever and a day. So that's how they were propagated. And throughout the Middle East, they still are. It's not terribly efficient. The reason, of course, we use rootstocks in this country is to get the vigour from the species rose stock to be able to graft a garden plant on top of it. Well, if you're using suckers, you don't get that option.
Right, yes. And what surprises me is that this is all news to me. I had no knowledge of that enormous acreage just to produce rose oils.
No, you're absolutely right. When I first looked at it, after I'd sat in drinking whatever I was in the Villa Giulia, I'd never even heard of this, you know, this sort of industry. That's why I thought it was really worth taking a strong look at. it gives you an idea, Peter, just in terms of rose water, let alone rose oil, that the average household would go through about 5 or 6 gallons a week of this stuff. You can see...
Gallons?
That's right. So you can see why, you know, production is at such a high level. A ton of rose petals, Peter, makes 1 kilogram or 1 litre of rose oil.
A ton of rose petals. That's a lot of rose petals. What? Robert, you've opened my eyes to all kinds of things in terms of the history of the rose and the scale of its production in the Middle East particularly.
I was only thinking, having spoken to you the other day, it wasn't that many years ago, was it, that I was supplying roses to your sun gardens at Chelsea? And I thought we
Sunflower Street, those were the days, Robert. Yeah.
Weren't they just?
Yes.
And I thought, well, we're still here, Peter, and we've come a long way.
And I look forward to seeing you at the next Chelsea. Fingers crossed that we can meet.
Well, absolutely.
Thanks again for today. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Good to see you.
What are the burning questions of the week? Well, I had a query about whitefly, you know, the brassica aphid on kale. Well, and it also gets onto sprouts too. And a good way to control those is a spray with SB Plant Invigorator. That does a pretty good job. And of course, the period between spraying and eating is very short. Whatever you do, pay special attention to the underside of the leaves. That's where the brassica aphid tends to breed and accumulate. I was asked if there's still time to sow broad beans and the hardy garden peas. Well, it's getting a bit late, but if you do want to have a go, it would be my advice to sow immediately, bring them indoors in the warm so that you get them germinated as quick as possible. And then once the shoots show through, they can be moved out, ideally into cold frames or a cold greenhouse. And if you don't have that, a sheet of glass lent against a south-facing wall will give all the protection those kind of late sowings need. I'm still cutting a few flowers from out in the garden, cutting chrysanthemums. There's some dahlias too, not particularly good quality, but they're there still fresh and haven't been hit by the frost. And the last roses of summer are opening and they will open more cleanly and will be fresher if you do cut them in bud and bring them to let them open indoors out of the rain, strong winds and heavy dews that come every night. And for my tailpiece, how about the quote by Ray D. Everson, the philosopher who said that work well done never needs doing over, never weeded a garden. Amen to that. How is it that a seedling bramble can grow so long, so quickly, and yet out of sight? I've found several really long, thorny pieces straggling through perennial shrubs. But once the leaves come down, you see them and make sure that you dig them out. Get down several inches. If you just cut them off at the top, they'll be growing again in a minute. Our thanks to this week's sponsor, Hayloft Plants Limited of Pershore, Worcester. And to my producer, Rich Jarman. And of course, to you for listening. Sights, lips, balls.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.